Welcome to An Examined Education, a podcast recorded at the Cambridge School, a Christian classical school in San Diego, California, where we examine an education worth pursuing. On today's episode, you're going to hear from Jim Hamilton, the chair of classical languages at Cambridge, and he's addressing the upper school student body at our house retreat that happens every year at the beginning of the year. He's talking about what makes Cambridge classical, and he traces classical education into antiquity, particularly drawing from Quintilian, as he talks about the special relationship between teachers and students in the classical tradition. Enjoy the conversation. Without further ado, Jim Hamilton.
This is answering the question of what makes Cambridge classical. And I should start with a brief explanation of classical education and how it has developed over time. The philosophy of teaching that we would call classical began in ancient Athens, where students at a young age were intentionally taught to be well-rounded in subjects like the natural sciences, geometry, and rhetoric. This was always done under the guidance of a teacher who taught them privately or in small groups. This practice was adopted and honed by the Romans, who widened the scope of subjects to the trivium and quadrivium. And again, it was taken up and improved upon in the Middle Ages, adding studies like medicine and theology. Yet through it all, two principal aims remained constant. One, to teach students to think and learn for themselves, equipping them with the means to enjoy and flourish in whatever they might pursue. And two, to grow in wisdom and character. At Cambridge, you often hear, and hopefully know, our mission statement. Such phrases within it, like to know, love, and practice that which is true, good, and beautiful, and to live purposefully, say much in a few words. Beyond that, you've almost definitely heard other terms and phrases thrown around, like how we teach to the whole student, and that we desire to have rightly ordered affections. Have you ever thought deeply about how these are important to us at Cambridge, and how they affect you as students here? These are really loaded words, and they speak to this school's adherence to the classical tradition. At Cambridge, we take this much more holistic approach in educating students than the average school. Consequently, there is a whole host of emphases I could stress regarding classical education. What I want you to take away today is the way in which we accomplish a classical education through the mentoring role of us teachers to you students. I was inspired by something that Mr. Baber said in one of our pre-planning meetings this past week. He was explaining house to the new teachers, as well as getting us veterans pumped up for the year. And among the many wonderful things he said, this was my favorite, I'm paraphrasing, that house gives us the opportunity to interact with you, the students, on a more informal basis than the classroom. What school can you think of that makes a point for its teachers to hang out with each of you and to have fun outside of the classroom? And this is straight from the ancients. The word, this is where it gets, I'm getting nerdy, guys. The word mentor comes from a character in the Odyssey. He was a good friend of Odysseus, and he was too old to participate in the Trojan War. So Odysseus placed his son Telemachus under his care while he was away. The Spartans, so in actual historical Greece, similarly believed that all young men should have mentors outside of the family. Like the mentor of the Odyssey, these were often close friends of the mentees' fathers, and such relationships were formed to provide the mentees with an outlet to discuss matters that might be too difficult or uncomfortable to discuss with one's own family. In this way, a young Spartan need not bottle up anything that might cause him concerns. This practice demonstrates two necessary features of a mentor. It is semi-parental in nature, and thus requires a friendship between one another. As you can imagine, it really isn't a far leap to apply the practice of mentorship to more formal education. For the ancients, this application happens naturally. One of the best examples comes from the famous Roman orator and educator Quintilian. He wrote extensively on how the role of a teacher should be that of a mentor, focusing much on the fact that he was entrusted by his students' parents to essentially take on their role during his time with them. And as such, that would require him to become knowledgeable of his charges by means of a parent-like relationship. Here's one excerpt from Quintilian regarding a teacher's approach to a class. "I do not wish a boy to be sent where he will be neglected, but a good teacher will not burden himself with a larger number of pupils than he can manage. And it is further of the very first importance that he should be on a friendly and intimate terms with us, and make his teaching not a duty, but a labor of love. Then there will never be any question of being swamped by the number of our fellow learners." Hopefully you can start seeing some connections from this quote to how we do things at Cambridge. Perhaps the simplest, and to say it in modern terms, Quintilian argues for small class sizes. This is good for both management and allowing the teacher to become closer with his students. But the most important takeaway from this is that a teacher must view the position as a labor of love. A labor of love is a term I hear quite often applied to parenthood and to mentorship. Knowing that we have adopted this stance at Cambridge, your teachers treat their position as a vocation. And this isn't really a punching the time card type job. Hence, we're here right now spending the night with you guys. Quintilian lays out this calling quite perfectly later on in his Institutio Oratoria. The quote is so perfect, in fact, I'm essentially going to let him finish out my talk for me. His eloquence is much, much, much better than mine, but I should also let it be known, I'm doing this for the purposes of this talk and to promote further discussion, so this kind of practice of massive block quoting is not encouraged in writing your own papers. I get to do it. So here we go. "Let him therefore adopt a parental attitude to his pupils and regard himself as the representative of those who have committed their children to his charge. Let him be free from vice himself and refuse to tolerate it in others. Let him be strict, but not austere. Genial, but not too familiar. For austerity will make him unpopular, while familiarity breeds contempt. Let his discourse continually turn on what is good and honorable. The more he admonishes, the less he will have to punish. He must control his temper, without, however, shutting his eyes to faults requiring correction. His instruction must be free from affectation, his industry great, his demands on his class continuous, but not extravagant. He must be ready to answer questions, and to put them unasked to those who sit silent. In praising the recitations of his pupils, he must be neither grudging nor overgenerous. The former quality will give them a distaste for the work, while the latter will produce a complacent self-satisfaction. In correcting faults, he must avoid sarcasm and, above all else, abuse. For teachers whose rebukes seem to imply positive dislike discourage industry. He should declaim daily himself, and what is more, without stint, that his class may take his utterances home with them. For however many models for imitation he may give them from the authors that they are reading, it will still be found that fuller nourishment is provided by the living voice, as we call it, more especially when it proceeds from the teacher himself, who, if his pupils are rightly instructed, should be the object of their affection and respect. And it is scarcely possible to say how much more readily we imitate those whom we like." All right, love that quote. No. Let's walk through some of his major points that all focus around this mentoring relationship. Reiterating my earlier point, we see him explicitly speak of taking on a parental role in teaching. He also encourages a teacher to apply phronesis in his interactions with his pupils. If you're a little lost with some of the less common words here, let's take my favorite example. To be strict but not austere, genial but not too familiar. He's pointing out how to find the golden mean of a teacher-student relationship. Teachers should have a friendly relationship with students, but that is distinctly different from one with a contemporary peer. In simpler terms, teachers are your friends, but not your buddies. As Cambridge teachers practicing in the classical tradition, our personal relationships with you are especially important in teaching you wholly. And that is why, as our charges, there must also be a certain degree of professional separation. In this way, we are to act as models to imitate, not just in teaching our own subjects, but as models of character. As Quintilian finishes out that beautiful quote, much of what you take away from school proceeds from the teacher himself. And as anyone tends to model someone whom they like, we must be that for you. Now, I cringe as I read some of the things he mentions. He must avoid sarcasm. Sorry, guys. All of your teachers, definitely me, have their weaknesses. Nevertheless, this is what is meant when we claim to teach to the whole student. To give it a modern, perhaps overly simplified term, these are the much sought after soft skills. Just as important as learning and mastering tangible skills at school, think subject-specific skills, translating Latin, solving math problems, arguing using a claim, evidence, and warrant, etc. Just as important are these soft skills. These are intangible skills that you pick up by being around other people of good character, who reinforce the values in your own home. Like the ability to have a good conversation, something as simple as that, but even more so, to imitate and show character in being wise, respectful, honest, and the list of these rightly ordered affections goes on and on. One final observation. Isn't it amazing how contemporary Quintilian reads? I feel like that quote can be put directly into our faculty handbook. Which makes me happy on so many levels, by the way. It satisfies my love of classics and reminds me why teaching at Cambridge is so amazing. All that to say, this mentoring practice is based on a long tradition, and I hope this gave you some appreciation for just one minor part of classical education and what a special privilege it is to partake of this tradition as a member of the Cambridge School. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to An Examined Education. Be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And if you like what you hear, be sure to check out our website, schedule a tour, reach out to the advancement office. We'd love to see you. And we'd love to hear what you have to say about the podcast. So be sure to check us out on your favorite social media platform. Again, that's at An Examined Education. Leave us a comment, rate and review, and we'll see you next time.